Una, what's happening? This is the Maniacal Menace, Kyle Smith, speaking from the future about the past and the present. Man, this one was a good one. The dream, the journey, the struggle. A comic's life with Sumac Tor Galgar. Listen up and enjoy these words. You can follow me at Maniacal Menace on Instagram or maniacalmenace.com. That's ManiacalMenace.
I think it's time to blow this thing. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
I think it's stranger because I'm used to like comedy stage voice me. So and I'm like, okay, I'm listening to the jokes, so I know how that's going.
Right.
As opposed to just listening to me talk normally in a conversation. I don't listen back to my own conversation with people.
It's very strange. What's up, what's up, what's up? Boom, back again, goddammit, to another Tell Me a Joke. The guideline of chasing the dream. Man, today we got the homie who just fed me some deliciousness. Sumac.
Yeah.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good, man. Fuck, I fed you Indian food.
Yes.
So that's the thing. If you're gonna come to my place,
I have to.
Yeah, I would cook for you. Felt like you already were talking to me about the drive, so I was like, it'll be a lot easier doing it this way.
That is nice.
I always enjoy, I mean, maybe it's the quality I got from my mother or whatever,
but yeah,
if you're going to come over, I will offer to feed you.
Oh, come on. See, look at that.
And
hospitality.
You know, that's why I asked if you liked Indian food to begin with, because some people either never tried it before, or maybe they can't handle the spice level or something like that. But I knew you'd like it.
Yeah.
I knew you'd handle spice well.
Yeah, so. That was right up my alley.
Yeah.
That was the shit, all right? To say that it was all vegan and...
Yeah, it was.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down to it, I didn't add any eggs or dairy to it.
It's amazing. It's not that it's amazing, it was just really delicious. He had these little, what's the little wraps called again?
Olivadi.
Oh, yeah. That thing there. The flavors that happened in my mouth, when you look at it, it's like, I don't expect it to taste like what I think it's going to taste like. And then when you taste it, it's like, man, why is this so amazing? It's really delicious.
If anybody wants to Google it, they could spell it Alloovadi, or also is referred to as Patra, which is easier, Patra.
Ah, okay.
So if you ever go to an Indian store and you're in like the frozen section and want to try it out or something without making it from scratch, your first go around.
So they have them already packaged.
Yeah, that's what I did for you tonight.
I made
it easier on myself. And so those were just from the
frozen. That was delicious. That was very delicious. Man, but so you've been out in L.A. for how long?
So I moved here January 2016. I left Ohio New Year's Day 2016.
Yeah.
And I drove across the country. And I took my time, too. And kind of had stopping off points along the way, and ended up here, like January 9th, I want to say, was when I actually got into LA.
Whew, that's amazing. That's dream chasing at its finest, people.
And it was awesome because, first to begin with, I spent 30 years of my life in Ohio, right?
Mm-hmm.
Different parts of the state, but always in Ohio.
Yeah.
So, first, to the idea of even moving to L.A. and living in L.A. Was something always of interest to me.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to do that, great.
Right.
But then also to just drive across the country like that, I hadn't done something like that. Like, I did where I first met you in New Orleans. That was the first time I really did, like, a southern tour.
Yeah.
I've been doing comedy for so long, but I never... just been like, let's get in my car and go do that type of thing. So that was awesome. And then 2 months later, I did it across the country.
Ew.
And it was wild because that first year, I went across the country 3 different times. Because I ended up going back to Ohio at one point, like July 4th. My buddy's sister was moving out here. And he said to me, oh, she's having some issue with her car service that was going to move her car across the country. And he's like, you're back in Ohio. Would you want to drive her car all the way to LA? She'll pay you. I'm like, hell yeah. What? I've done this already. I get paid to, you know, experience the country again. So I took a different route this time to LA. So I could just go through some different states. Dolo. Rather than like right across the country.
Just on a solo?
So it was pretty wild. But... Yeah,
that's, all right, because you're 3 years ahead of what I'm doing right now, what I've done right now. This is basically, since I've started this podcast, that was basically the process in the nutshell, just all summed down into one from what I've started off mentioning, how I got here and why I'm here. And yeah, I didn't have the money to do no tour or nothing like that. I had to come here. I had to get here and then just start living. And I was like, all right. So basically, I just drove straight from Texas all the way here. Like, nonstop. Like, I just, boom, hit it hard. And I didn't even sleep. Like, I didn't pull over or nothing. I mean, besides to get gas and piss and all that. But basically, I tell everybody that which is a route that I had two Arizona RXs. And a vitamin water, energy. That's it.
Wow.
Yeah. And maybe some snacks. I had some snacks and 23 grams worth of weed. Which was terrible. Oh, my God. Terrible. But, I mean, that just gives you fucking 23-something hours with just you and your thoughts and a shitload of stuff.
But that didn't make you additionally hungry?
Kind of, sort of, but, I mean, as long as I had trail mix, that's what I had, which...
Is filling?
Oh, yeah. Yes. So much, you get protein and nutrients and stuff from nuts and berries and seeds and shit, all that, yeah. That was also, like, an energy boost as well. I strategically mapped this out. I'm like, trail mix? Good. Okay, I got me two bags of the good trail mix that I like. I like that M&M chocolate shit. Like, I don't care for the candy trail mix. Right. I like the yogurt type. The type that comes with, like, the fruits and the bananas and the mango and papaya and shit in there.
Yeah, I got you.
I like all that mix. And so I had two bags of those. That was basically sustenance unless I wanted to stop and get something to eat. I don't think I did that. I don't know. I just fucking gunted it. And then, like, my people was like, all right, when you go through the desert, you're going to need to fill up this fucking tank. They gave me a 5-gallon gasoline tank. And I filled that motherfucker all the way up because apparently I might have pulled, like, you know, I might have ran out of gas going through the desert because the desert's long as shit.
Right.
I ain't even noticed the desert. Like, I was so focused. My vision was just like, boom. I wanted to see the desert. I wanted to stop it. I had this head. I had this fucking, this like, the head that they put the wigs on so they could work on the wigs and shit. I had that for my ex and I didn't want to have it in the car anymore. And I was like, I'm going to put that motherfucker in the desert. And she was like, don't do that. And I was like, I will. Once I get there, I'm going to do that shit. And I missed the desert. I missed the desert completely. Like, yeah. But, you know, I had 5 gallons worth of gas just fucking reeking in my goddamn trunk for the rest of the way. I really had to plug that one up. Like, it was a bit much. Yeah, but eventually I used the rest of it. Because gas is expensive as a motherfucker out here.
Right.
Oh my God.
Well, on my trip, there's a stretch of I-70 in Utah where there is no services for 110 miles. Now, it's a gorgeous part of the state. But unless you aren't aware of it or don't read that sign, you can get stuck in it. And that's what happened to me. And, you know, I'm riding the gaslight, and it was nighttime, too. Snowing a little bit, luckily not
snowing. Never crazy. Drove through that shit. Oh, yeah, I have, just a little bit.
Yeah, so luckily it wasn't a blizzard or anything crazy like that. But I just go, you know, I'm looking up on my phone, like, when's the next service station? I'm like, oh, it's not going to make it. So at least one exit said gas on it. So I get off that exit, but still the gas station is, you know, 13 miles away the exit or whatever. But at night, really only two trucks maybe I saw along the way too. So, you know, if I stall out, like, I don't know who's helping me out. Some weirdo, a horror movie's about to happen, you know. But it still was that way too. It was really bizarre. I wish I could remember the name of the town. Clearly some small town in Utah. But yeah, like a one pump gas station. There was like a stray dog walking by, you know, and somebody was in there inside that station, but very creepy. The whole thing was creepy. I was like, thank God I could fill up my tank somewhere, and at least I didn't...
And not have to go to Texas Chainsaw.
Right, Jesus before I get out to L.A., like, I'm already dead before I could get here.
Oh, you took a different route. Wow.
Yeah, so I went across, I want to say, you know, Missouri... through Kansas and whatnot, Colorado, then down to Utah.
Oh,
Utah. Yeah.
That's cool as shit. Yeah, I just went straight to fucking Arizona, the little tip or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that second time in July. So that's when I went through the desert, so I could experience that. So that was like Oklahoma through Texas, which so much of Texas was nothing.
Nothing. You know? Oh, my God.
And then, but New Mexico's gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I think you go through New Mexico just a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
Just like the
but the switch from like nothing Texas to New Mexico is so drastic.
Yes, I do remember that.
New Mexico is a gorgeous
state. I remember getting to the border and remember like you be careful when you get to the border. I was like, he's like, you gonna see. I was like, all right. I get there right, and I'm like, oh shit, this is the border. This is it. This is what motherfuckers, this is Cheech and Chong right here, right? You know, so I'm like, oh, fuck. I get there and he was like, hey, you legal? I was like, yeah. All right. I was like, that's it? That's it? Motherfucker didn't come out. Motherfucker leaned over. He leaned over out of whatever room he was in. And was like, hey, you legal? I'm like, that's it? Nothing? He just had wanted to look at my face. I'm like, oh. You look like illegal. Right. And then come on through. I thought it was going to be like, you know, dogs coming out, mirrors and shit.
Yeah.
Nah, none of that. None of that at all. I was like, well, this was cool. All right. I got to experience that. And then fucking riding through the desert. I rode through the desert at night. That's why I really didn't see it. But I noticed that. And my music and my thoughts. And when I got here, I just pulled up in front of the house that I was supposed to be Airbnb in at, and I just went to sleep. Okay. It was a Friday.
Yeah.
I went to sleep on the wrong side of the street on a Friday. So I was asleep for like maybe 30 minutes, and somebody came, hey man, you gotta move. I was like, I gotta move. Like, why there's no one here. Where am I? Like, why do I have to move? He was like, street cleaning. I was like, oh, shit. And I look at the sign. I'm like, Friday street cleaning. I'm like, damn. So I had to go find parking after that. Fucking parking is atrocious out here. I can't stand. Where do you park?
So that's what's nice about my place is I have a spot.
Yeah.
Since I live in a part of the house. So she at least has a spot for me too, so that's also, there's a lot of aspects to why I never moved from the place I've been in.
It's amazing.
It's because it's very appealing and it's all I need, and even though I travel a lot still, I mean there's no reason to leave.
You are like, we on some, okay, first off, he stays on the hill that my car couldn't get up. three cylinders, but I got four. Only three of them work. And, like, I tried to come up. There's two hills that you got to come up to get to his spot. My car went up the first hill barely. It really didn't go up. So I was like, I'm not going to make the second hill because the second hill is a lot steeper than the first hill. Steep as fuck. And so I turned around and I parked on the street and I walked up each hill. And my calves hurt. So that's how steep these hills are. Right? My car, it did not get the momentum. Like, I would have had to, like, actually go back to that red light that's down there and then come and hope that no calls is coming and just turn and shoot up in. Right. Like in third. I would have probably had to be in third and then drop down to second just so I can maybe make it up to the landing right. where you're at. Yeah. And then that would have been dangerous yeah. because I'm like, if I'd have stalled out, ooh, we reversing all the way. There's, yeah, there's yeah. no space on that street.
Yeah, no. Man.
Oh, man. It is a grind out here. And it is just my first, nine months, the baby out here. And it's,
when I texted you, LA baby, I meant like, I wasn't calling you that. You realize that, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I understood okay. that.
I just reminded you that. Well, I texted you, and then after that, I'm like, oh, I hope he doesn't think I insulted him in some way.
No. I didn't even think of that until just here. Now.
But I was just more saying, like, it's LA, baby.
It's LA, baby. Like, yeah, that's what I was like.
Whatever you thought time wise to get here, I knew it was not going to be accurate. So
yeah.
I prepared appropriately.
I was like, I think I got this. And then a whole bunch of other shit happened. And once I got in the car, I was like, ooh, this ramped up. I didn't, and then it took me a whole nother way, which was better, but still, I'm like, this is good. I'm starting to learn the routes a little more. You know, it's taking me a minute, but it's not as bad, you know, as it could be. It's shitty. I ain't gonna lie. It's driving places for me. since this car is just I've done so much to this car. I wanted to be a mechanic on it. I've actually wanted to do how-to videos on it. I love your how-to videos.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, when I catch them around. And I've also thought of doing shit like that as well, but in just a stupid way. And it was just going to be me making blunts and then joints and then weed and then being like, all right, if you want to learn how to do this first, you got to smoke a blunt and then move on.
Who knows? I just started doing it for fun. I did a couple when I was in Columbus. And that was what was nice when I got out here. You know, I came here and I'm like, I'm here for comedy. Mm-hmm. So I want to keep creating as much as I can. And so that's why I started... I got a camera, I had, and you know, doing those videos, it's just me. So it's all on me to just do it.
Right.
Edit it. It's not too difficult. And now with the nature of how comedy is and the internet is, I mean, people are making stuff on their phones or like putting anything out there. So as long as it looks good, that's it. That's all you need to put out there. So I just started kind of picking up on stuff whenever I had to fix something or I had... You know, just something I was working on or something I learned new. I thought, okay, I learned this. Let me just make a video about it and make it funny and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, definitely, like right now I have one of the top videos for how to rap a 120-inch boxing rap. That's like my most popular video. So it's so random. It's just something like I started boxing when I was out here.
Yeah.
So I'm like, but a lot of the boxing rap videos on YouTube were like for, you know, more not professional boxers, but more established boxers
mm-hmm.
with like the longer raps that are 180 inches.
Yeah.
So I just thought, what the heck? Let me just make this because there's not really one of those out there. And then because of that, yeah, I mean, I can see their analytics. And it says, you know, people are Googling 120-inch raps, or they're going onto YouTube and typing that in, and my video would come up. So, yeah, now that's my most popular video, and it's the most random thing. And I acknowledge it at the beginning. I'm not like I'm some pro boxer teaching you this. I say, you know, hey, I'm a beginner at boxing, and this is for other beginners, just to show you how to rap it. And people have appreciated it, man. That's what's wild. So I just, that was still, you know, I'd done a few more before then. And I have even a joke about something somebody commented on, the one I made about replacing your wiper blades. But, yeah, it opens you up to an audience, you know, you just would never experience your comedy. So it's been great in that it's what I always wanted out of comedy, which is like, I'm making people laugh, and I'm also helping people. And yeah, you still have the usual of YouTube and the internet of people making whatever comments or being negative.
Yeah,
of course. But for the most part, it's been positive and appreciated. I'm like, it's very it's easy very to do. Dude,
it doesn't seem like people should just, if they're shitting on you, son, it's just be because they want to hate on something.
Yeah,
that's,
totally.
That's the only reason that could be.
And even it says, you know, smookcomedy.com in the bottom.
Right.
Like, there's a part of this that's a joke. You realize that. Like, I'm kind of, I'm making exactly. fun of how-to videos while teaching you
yes.
stuff. So, but, you know, people always be negative or want to put son, in their own thing in the comments.
How do you tie your shoes?
Huh?
How do you tie your shoes?
Oh, I do a very weird method of the...
Do you do the two bows?
Yeah.
You do the fucking two bows?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You do, too?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm very...
Oh, this is good. This is so good because I want people to know that there's more than one method on tying shoes. Yeah. And when I saw that the first time, I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Right.
My cousin was... The one that did it, he used to, and it was so weird because it was like, you got the bunny ear over here and you got the bunny ear over here and you just wrap them motherfuckers. And I was right. like, whoa, you just skipped a step, dude. Like, hold on. Like, who taught you this? Like,
yeah.
I thought there was only one way is you make this bunny ear here, then you wrap that motherfucker, choke it, and then stick the snake through it and pull that motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. And I was like, there's no other way. And that's like three steps.
Yeah.
You know, the other one just is bomb, bomb. And I'm like, no, son, where is this coming from? And
yeah.
it's wild. So I wanted to make a how-to video.
Go for it, man. People will watch it. Anything from my experience. But it's nice in a certain way. You know, it amazes me that that's just how people go to find information out,
mm-hmm.
right? And so... Some people, it's just a very bare-bones thing of they just have no knowledge on a certain thing. So if you guide them appropriately and you can be funny about it, they appreciate it.
Yeah.
I mean, I did one, I fixed, you know, it wasn't even a fix, really. It was just a weird thing with the vacuum we had, which didn't involve much. You just had to clear out the gunk of it inside. So I made that video, and then this woman commented just like, thank you so much. You saved me so much money or getting, you know, that's all the issue was.
That sounds like an 85-year-old person that wrote that down.
Yeah, right. But who knows? I mean, these are the people encountering, you know, they look it up on YouTube because they have the same issue.
Yeah.
And it might be the most simple issue, but that's another thing I've realized, too. It's just kind of, again, it's whatever might come along to me that I'm doing or experiencing and I think
yeah.
is worthwhile, I make into a video and I make it funny. And sometimes I think to myself, oh yeah, this will do really well and nobody watches it. And then something that I go, this seems real dumb,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
a lot of people watch it. So it's really bizarre how it all works out.
You are very good, Mr. Clean.
Oh, that's, thanks, man.
I was like, wow. That's really good.
Yeah, I mean, I dressed like that because I went to my cousin's and, you know, she has trick-or-treaters come to her house. So I helped her out with that. But then I was like, well, I'm already looking like this.
Yes.
And I make how-to videos.
Yes.
I got to do something about cleaning real quick.
Yes.
And so I did that.
Oh,
just
so
about
good.
Cleaning a bath mat.
I very much so enjoyed that. I was like, this is about cleaning a bath mat.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't even clean them things. I know. I'm going to watch this now.
Right.
Very, very, very good. I enjoy. How long have you been doing comedy?
13 years now.
Oh.
Yeah, man. September of 06, I started. So, it's been a long haul, but still, I still feel really good about it. I mean, the biggest thing about it is just, to me, the point I came to was feeling happy about it.
Yeah.
And I feel happy about it because of this type of stuff. I'm still creating.
Right.
I had to take a step back and think about, especially after coming out here.
Yeah.
Everything you deal with here.
At what year, Mark, would you say that was where you had to be like, oh, I got to assess. I got to take a moment. And
I think after coming out here.
Mm.
Because initially I came out here thinking, you know, you just want to take yourself up to that next level.
Yeah.
I accomplished everything I could in Columbus. I traveled, did stand-up. And I also felt like, okay, my comedy does well, but, you know, when I do the clubs, some nights you just go, like, you're not my audiences.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so I wanted to just take that next step. I wanted to experience what it was like. I'd visited here a couple times. I go, this is, the vibe here is exactly what makes me love comedy. You right. know, some of the shows I go and check out, how my friends were doing out here, too. Mm-hmm. So I came out here just wanting to take that next step, that next level of thinking, getting that career in comedy in some way. So really, I always loved stand-up, but I never was... I've done acting before, but I've never been focused in on that or very determined with that. It was more, again, continuing to work in comedy and the writing aspect of it. Mm. Because I got a bachelor's in English. I've always been a writer.
Yeah, your writing is very impeccable. And it shows. It shows. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's always been my interest. So it was about trying to get kind of a writing job in comedy, being on a writing staff of a TV show or something like that. And then I got out here, and it's not as if that's... I've submitted some packets, and it's not as if I'm not still interested in that in some way if the right opportunity comes up. But coming out here, you're also exposed and meet enough people to the amount of strange jobs people have to do within comedy, or certainly unfulfilling writing work. You know, like, okay, you got to write on this show, and would you even watch this show? You know, that type of thing. And that's always been a tough thing for me to grasp, because I do love comedy, but I also love being a part of things that I'm proud of, I guess, too, which is a tough thing to this business. If you really want to be in it, you're obviously going to have to do some stuff.
Do some shitty shit that you don't want to really do.
But yeah, and that's a hard... Because, you know, stand-up, that's a hard transition for a stand-up, too.
Yeah.
We've always been so inclined to, this is our stuff, we've written it, we're performing it.
Right.
This is us, and we're proud of what we're producing, or whatever, and the way we analyze it. And I had this experience before, too, because I interned at Mad Magazine. And there I'd submit stuff. You know, I'd write stuff and submit it. And, you know, the rejections from the editors would just vary. It'd be like, no, we're not interested, to this just won't, this is funny, but it's not, we just can't use it. You know, something like that. Like, they agreed, but it's like, it's not going to hit with this demographic we're going for, or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'd had that experience early on of understanding what would be entailed.
What happens when that happens? Do you still get compensated after you write that, or does it, since they don't use it, I don't get.
Well, when I was interning, that was just almost, hey, I'm submitting something to potentially get in the magazine.
Yeah.
Or we're just spewing, you know, jokes during a group discussion. Whenever I got published, they'd pay me.
Right.
But then one time I wrote something, they didn't take mine, but then another writer wrote basically the same idea, but they took his jokes.
Yeah.
But they basically told me, hey, you had the idea first, we'll pay you for the idea rights.
Wow.
So I got compensated for that, even though my actual writing wasn't in there. It was this other writer's.
Huh.
That was about Taco Bell sauces, like the sauce packets, like the stupid things they write on. Yeah. So I don't know why my lines weren't as funny as this other guy's to them, because it was still all, you know, diarrhea jokes or something that'll appeal to kids reading Mad, but whatever. But... So, I mean, what was nice about that was it exposed me to that process that's involved in comedy.
Right.
And the gatekeeping that can be involved with it, with something as simple as just one joke.
Yeah.
When you get involved with it. So, I think another reason I got into stand-up, I always loved stand-up, but again, I didn't think that I necessarily... I mean, still to this day, family, friends know I was a shy person. I still am shy.
Yeah.
So they can't understand, how did I going to stand up, or do this thing on stage.
It is strange to see, and it's like, that motherfucker's funny as shit. It doesn't. You won't get it from your demeanor or just looking at you or how you, you know, your presence is very, it's very, very subtle. You don't raise no eyebrows. You don't approach with no type of aggression or anything like that. It's just like, oh, it really seems like you just coming for a pat on the back or maybe to say, excuse me, can I get that piece of sugar around you or something like that? Right. Like, yeah, you seem like a guy I meet in the coffee shop that'd be in there writing often. When I see you, but when you get on stage, it's like, what? That's why you lumped in with Kamari and Laura and all them, because them motherfuckers write their ass off. And it is impeccable how you just formulate your sentences and words into something that's so goddamn silly. It's fucking good. I enjoy the shit out of that. How was your upbringing? Like, how are your parents? I know you're Indian descent, so was this shunned upon? Were you not? Are they supportive of you?
Yeah, I mean they are, but I don't want to say shunned upon. Like, I think my mom was always supportive, whatever I wanted to do. My father, so basically, my first year doing stand-up, I was also applying to law school.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I graduated and I didn't really have a job, I ended up at the company I still work at now, but that was kind of in a contractor role. Like, I was just a temp. So I was applying for law school. I got into law school, but then comedy went really well that first year, and I really loved it. And I just knew what law school entailed, and that my heart wasn't like 100% in it, but then you got to put 100% into it.
Right.
There wouldn't have been really any time for stand-up, or if I was doing it, I would have been really, really losing my mind probably doing both. So I held off on doing law school, and obviously I've never gone since 13 years. But those first few years, really, my dad was kind of waiting on that. Like, you're going to become a lawyer. Why are you doing this?
Right.
And it took a lot of time. Now I'm at a really good point. I think for my dad, it all comes back to kind of like money, you know? Yeah. So I make money at comedy now.
Right.
And my album gets royalties from SiriusXM and stuff, and so that's, I tell him about that, and then so now he's a lot warmer to it because I'm a professional now, you know, where it was different before when you're pursuing it and the how tough it is to when you it's tough to say, like, I'm not really getting a lot of income from this at all. It's part of what I'm pursuing. I still have this other job with it, and so
the piggyback.
So he was still supportive, but I know deep down he still is always about it's the Indian thing, always about doing the secure thing. You know, you have this mind and you have this degree and try to keep doing that. And to their credit, I still got a job at my company and I was still doing that secure path, and that was great because it did allow me to save money. And I think having a job is a good thing because you have a reality to how other people's lives function.
Right.
You can find comedy in that. And those are your audiences, you know?
Yeah.
I can see it with comedians who are just comedians and they hang out in open mic scenes and you go, you have no sense of how other people function other than this small world. You see it play out on social media.
You can't say that out there, dude. You're going to get fucked up. Like, why would you do that? Like, ooh, you're going to have to censor that when you get out to the big people because you will get fired. You got to be careful. You got to be careful what you say around these big people. And see, that I've asked that question because, like, since I have moved from New Orleans, I've been there 33 years. I was like, all right, I gotta go. I gotta see something else.
Right.
And to see other cultures, to like realize that, oh, okay, I didn't have it as bad, or like I actually have a freedom to just go about life. But fucking black parents, they just want you out the house anyway. It's just like, get the fuck out of my house. It's like, oh, okay, I'm out. So, like, to see that, because I watched a show called Fastest Car, and basically it's a drag racing show, but people, they it's cars that they built. They built themselves, and they fucking race them. And, but the kick is that they have to race a supercar. So it's sleepers. They're all sleepers. You know what a sleeper is? A car that doesn't look like it's supposed to be fast, but it's fast as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they those are sleeper cars. And then they have their supercars, which are like fucking Ferraris, Bugattis, Lamborghinis and shit.
Right.
You know, Teslas. They had a guy with a Tesla out there. Motherfuckers are fast. But they had this Indian guy that was on there. And basically, his, like we were saying, his dad wanted him to be the lawyer or follow in the dream, the footsteps of what he did, mm-hmm. of being a lawyer or whatnot, or a real estate person. I forget what it was, but he was like, "Nah, I'm pretty good at this drag racing shit. I'm gonna just build this car." And his dad was like, "Nah, you're not gonna do that." And so it got so bad to where his dad kicked him out the house. Kicked him out the house and was gonna take his car and blow that motherfucker up.
Jeez,
it was like, yo, really? He's put so much money into his car, and it was gonna get to the point to where he was gonna take his car and blow it up. So he had to leave. He had to leave after that. He dipped out and he fucking followed his dream. Now you see him on Netflix. Right. Fucking made his dad cry because he won.
Wow.
Yeah, he won one. He didn't win the whole thing, but he won his like division, his region, and. Yeah, he's like, and basically his dad can't because his he pushed him so much to do something else, and he was like, "Nah, you, this is what I want you to do. This is just, you're just wasting your time. You ain't really good at none of what you're doing right now. This ain't good for you." And then he's seen that he's like, "Oh, the emotions basically came over, and it feels good. It felt good to see it when I saw it,
right?
Like, getting older now, like." My parents, they're cool with basically whatever I'm doing, but I was raised in a very strict household.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dad was a militant man. Yep. He was military, so like there wasn't much that I could do, and I wasn't sheltered. Wasn't a sheltered kid, but I always had to work for whatever I wanted. So he would, you know. That's why it's very hard for me to ask for things, because I never did ask for stuff. He was like, "If you want something, you can go work for it, or you buy it with your own money." It's kind of raised like that, you know. Spare the rod, spoil the child type of mentality. So there was many times that I couldn't do certain things that the other kids could. I didn't have that freedom like everybody else could. Even though I was old enough too, it was just like, nah, I had restrictions on a lot. And it seems like that can, like, hinder a child as they grow, just all the restrictions and punishments and whatnot. But it gave me a sense of me being able to find myself and, like, being able to be comfortable with being alone and not losing my mind and shit and knowing what to do if I, you know, if it is just me for a while. That's why I knew coming out here, that drive, that 23 hours, that's why it wasn't nothing for me, just right. Because I've been punished for a long time, but now I have amenities to where I can do what I want. Like, so this drive, I could just go, you know. It's kind of like a bad thing. It's not really a good thing that my brain has kind of been molded into that. Like, it's kind of like trauma that I've went through, but it's because I was a pretty bad kid. So, you know, with badness comes punishment. And, you know, that was kind of how I was being raised. But it was always, you know, you can do whatever you can if you put your mind to it, you know.
Right.
I'm a lot smarter than what I think I am. Shit like that. And so I was always an intelligent kid. It was just, you know, this is kind of where things have gone now. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life until comedy came around. And to say that my dad is very supportive, I've always been very supportive of everything, I wouldn't know what it would feel like to be told, no, I can't do something that I really, really want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, even though if it's not just something that makes me happy, like this, like, you know, chasing this dream. Yeah, if I couldn't do that, if I was told, no, I'm supposed to do this, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, I would fucking lose it. I don't think I could. Ugh.
Yeah, I remember my dad saying, even about me getting like an English degree, I don't even remember what the context of the conversation was. But he said the sentence, like, we allowed you to get an English degree. You know what I mean? Wow. Like, that type of thing.
It's powerful words, man.
Yeah, so there's that. The support is there, but it's also still, there's that underlying feeling of, this wasn't our expectation at all. Over time, I can understand it, but it doesn't still mean that there's not an effect from it that still carries with me today. So we still, both of us, had the ability to do comedy, be where we're at right now.
Right.
But I'm curious, with some of the things you said, if the nature of your upbringing has an effect on how you handle yourself within comedy. And what I mean by that is, like, let me give this example. So, like, you don't ask for things, right? So, for example, like, with my show, like, I was like, come, do my show, you know? But I can tell you, I mean, this is the way comedy operates here. So many people ask to be booked on shows and whatever. People I never met before. Sometimes the brashness with which they ask me to be on the show, I go, I don't know you. And like the way you presented yourself, I don't want to even know you. Yeah. You know? So that's what's always very shocking to me. And when you said that, I could relate too, because for a long time in comedy, I didn't ask for things. I go, well, I'm going to keep working at it.
Right.
And I'll be earning it at some point. And that's not how this operates.
Yes.
Which is very different from how the upbringing of a hardworking kind of, I don't know how to phrase it exactly. Like, you don't, you know, you get your plate of food tonight and you eat all that food, and that is what you get, and that is how things operate in this household. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the not dream type.
Yeah, it's person, not though. Literally like you give me that food. I deserve that food. Like, that's how it feels sometimes in the way people approach comedy, in the sense of, like, I should be on that show. You give me that show. You know what I mean? It's like, no, it's not. I don't know how you operate that way.
Right.
Because I was not raised that way towards anything in life, let alone something like an artistic pursuit, you know? So I've grown to at least ask for other things. Also, over time, you get more confident and you go, I know I'm good at this thing.
Yeah.
So I don't feel wrong asking about this because I know I've earned that ability to ask it. But now there's people asking for stuff who have, you know, it's like, it's you've been like, doing comedy 6 months.
You're oversaturating us right now with the garbage that you're trying to bring. And that's the point that I've gotten to now, to where I'm like, oh, because I've had this discussion with Michael Abadotti, and that's, his situation is where he ain't even told his people yet. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So that's why I asked that question. But I've also got other Indian friends, and I'm like, how do y'all cope with that? And so just for me seeing in culture, like I was saying, like the culture that I work with, the Mexicans, they have never had Indian food, and don't even bother to try Indian food because they're going to stick straight to the Mexicans. So it's like, well, I mean, you got to branch out or do something. So just to dealing with that being Ray, I've gotten to the point to where I know that what I have is nice, or what I have is well enough to get going. So I need to start asking for things now. Like, cause he was telling me, he was like, man, I've always asked for whatever I needed to go to, wherever I was going, I've always asked to get on those shows or do whatnot. And I was, me being me, how I was raised, like I never asked for things. Things were always just given to me. Since I've been doing comedy, that's how things were in New Orleans. Things were just like, hey, you want to be on the show? Hey, you going to come on that show? So things were just given to me instead of me having to ask. So I was never acclimated to being like, oh, can I come on your show? Can I come on do this? Can I come do that?
Right.
I never had to do that. So coming out here, I realized, man, motherfuckers don't know me. You know, and yeah, I can put in all the work that I can, but it still doesn't mean that the right person is going to see me to be like, hey, I want you on my show. And it's very here and there because everything's so far out here.
Right.
So I realized that, yeah, I'm going to have to put something together. And I have the backing and I have everything. He was giving it to me. And I was like, all right, I get it. I know I need to put my foot down and, like, start nutting up. I mean, I can get on stage and talk to a whole bunch of people about certain shit, but, you know, I have that sense of halt to not ask to do certain shows. Like, people should, like, how it's going to work that people are going to come ask me. And I'm realizing that, nah, nobody.
Yeah, it can't operate.
Don't see me like that.
Yeah, and it can't operate here that way just because it's so vast. Which is different than where you or I came from.
Mm-hmm.
And when you establish, it was very easy to establish yourself in, whether it be Columbus or New Orleans, and be a reliable and funny comedian, and so people then want to have you on your shows and things like that.
Right.
Whereas now you're here, and it's the reliable and funny, some are, you know, there's just so many comedians here.
Yes.
So it's a different beast.
Yeah.
And so you've got to... But again, I also don't feel like I obviously love doing stand up, and I will, you know, put in the booking request to be on shows. But at the same time, I'm not fixated on it the way like so many people are here. I'm like, I'll do the stand up I can, but I still want to create other stuff with comedy. So
yeah.
It's like if I got a video idea, I'm going to create that tonight. That's better than going out to an open mic where nobody may care, you know? But I go to the open mics when, you know, I've written new stuff. I want to work it out.
Yeah.
But if not, maybe there's something else new that I could be working on comedy-wise. But I still want my nights to be about comedy. I mean, that's why I came out here, you know.
You got it down to a science.
For me, yeah. I mean, everybody else is different.
I mean, eventually, I feel you, though. Eventually, I know I'm going to get there. Eventually, I know I'm going to get there. Do I want to... Am I gonna last that long for me to get there? And I'm thinking, this weather's amazing.
Yeah.
I talked to my brother today. And he was like, nigga, it's cold. I was like, yeah, I got a light jacket on, son. Yeah. He was like, that's but so.
Well, everybody, even when I got out here, and those were new people I'm meeting who were nice, who didn't necessarily know me, introduced to me by others, you know, but they said the same thing in comedy. Like, the first year's just terrible.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, there were definitely ups and downs that first year, but at the same time, you know, you navigate that. The ups and downs will never go away. That's part of the artistic pursuit.
Yeah.
So you just have to navigate it to better understand yourself and why you're doing this to begin with.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at. You know, I go, I'm still happy creating. I need to create. I've realized that. I get depressed if I'm not creating.
Yes.
So yes. I get depressed by just static existence. So it's like if I haven't, if I haven't done anything that feels like
yes,
I'm creating, I'm doing something motivating to me like or that. Whatever.
Yeah.
I just... It'll because you're not moving, all of a sudden you're going down in that turtle shell.
Yeah.
And you feel worse.
Yeah.
And it's just because I'm not doing something. I want to be doing something and contributing and creating.
That's how I'm feeling at work a lot. I mean, I still have to look at it like, oh, nigga, you still building a building. Like, you still constructing the electricity inside this building to work, nigga. You are doing this. But it's still like... it's not what I want to do, though. Like, my knowledge is here, and I can go ahead and do this, but right now I'm going to take this piece of cardboard and this goddamn carpenter's pencil and write this joke down. I don't know when I'm going to tell it. I don't know when I'm going to have time to get on stage to tell it, but I have it, and it's written down, and it's going to be there forever, but I have so many jokes now that are just like, and out here, you search for that place that's like, oh, what's going to give me what I need instead of what these motherfuckers want, because what I need is like a good audience or just a good reaction to these jokes that are new. And, you know, that's it makes it very, very difficult because I still haven't found, for me staying in the valley, what was working for right. me. What's gonna be what'll be lucrative for me with places I should go that I don't have to worry about, oh, is there gonna be a hill up there or not? For comedy. Like
not for your car.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just
Yeah, I mean I can't speak to that because I don't know that experience. You know, I ended up in Highland Park, which was nice because Northeast LA, a lot of good shows happen here.
Yeah.
Or even the mics. So obviously I was navigating the mics that were in this general area. You right. know, I'm not going to drive all the way to Santa Monica for a mic. That's silly.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of... But I remember I went out with my buddy. This one mic, I have no idea if it still exists. I'll call it out. But it was Hyperion Tavern.
Oh, yeah. So that still goes.
Okay. But it was... the one time I went, it was miserable.
Oh.
So I'm paying for a drink.
Right.
No one cares.
Nope.
Everybody's looking at their phones. I don't know what the hosts are even, if they care. So I just go, I'm never coming back. What was the purpose of this? I just lost money to feel worse.
Yes.
And so once an open mic does that to me, I go, I'm never coming back here.
Yeah.
Because there's no purpose.
That's most of them that I've
So been. You have to figure now, that out.
You gotta navigate the fuck out of that. And I'm still in, well, I hit it hard. I hit it hard for a good few months, and then I was like, this is going nowhere. It felt like I was a rat in a goddamn circle. I was like, where's the maze? Like, I can't, like, I'm going to the same shit, and I'm not getting anything from this. Like, at least with a maze, you know, there's progress, but like, oh, this is not, oh, wrong way, turn back around and find another route. You know, there, it was just... I'm just wasting gas in this circle. Oh my God.
It all depends. In certain ways, it can be exciting. I mean, I've done mics that are at Saturday afternoon. So that's just kind of cool. That's something that's just not possible coming from Columbus.
Yeah.
But in LA, it's there.
Yeah.
So it's nice to know, if I just want to get up on a stage, I could do it at some very strange times.
Right.
But I know what I'm getting into. Maybe the comedians are supportive, maybe they're not, but maybe I can just talk into a mic.
Yeah.
And be able to do that. So there's good and bad to it, but there's definitely places like Hyperion Tavern. There's more than that. I'm not trying to call that place out of that. But you just checkmarked all the boxes of I don't want to do this. You know, if the hosts don't care, if I got to pay a drink minimum, if the comedians that are also there don't care and are just looking at their phones, then what am I really doing? I can just sit at home and talk out
tips,
loud.
Tips, people.
Yeah.
You come to LA and learn that shit.
Yeah, that was my perspective. And it's the same thing in New York City. I mean, the people I know that went out there, same thing. You go through it all to figure.
My perspective is like, I came here. That's on my list that I made. I made a list. I'm like, I don't want to do this no more. I'm not doing that no more. These taverns, fuck these taverns. Okay, Sycamore is another one. Sycamore Tavern fucked over me hard. Right, I first came out here. I had it sucked me in like a goddamn. I made this reference yet, like a casino, like when you're gambling for the first time, it get you.
It was
hit
good
you, yeah,
the first
you.
Time?
The first time I came, it was good because I went on, after Damon Wayans Jr. went off.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, and then I smashed it, and then I got a free drink and everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm coming back here. Came back and fucking, and then it was terrible. What? It's not upstairs no more? What's going on? What are we doing? Where is this basement? What is? I gotta get a drink. I have to get a drink.
The dojo or whatever.
I don't know what the fuck it is, dude.
I don't know. I went. Yeah, I just happened to be in the area, and that's why I went there. And it was just so.
I've scaled these streets of LA, and I've wasted so much gas and so much of time just. I haven't even seen these people ever again. There's certain people that I've ran into again, and I'm like, okay. And I'm like, all right, I remember your face, and I know I'm going to keep seeing you since I'm out here. But other people that I've run across, it doesn't register in my head. I'm like, you're null and void in my life, and I understand that. Like, I'll probably never, ever see you again.
Well, the thing about open mics here, which is different than coming from Columbus or New Orleans... is it's all just different realms of bad. More than it is like, oh, this is good, and this is where we hang out. Yeah, you know, like Surly Girl, our open mic in Columbus, was just the place for years, and we loved it. But this is more, you know, there's just no, in L.A., in the city itself, there's no real, like, oh, this is a great mic.
No camaraderie at all.
Yeah, and audiences or whatever. It's more just about a what could be determined a good mic is really if your fellow comedians, you know, watch, everybody's supportive.
Right.
You feel good about the stage time, the way it's set up, the host runs it well, runs it quickly. Don't do time in between comedians. Mm-mm, you know, things like that. Yeah, just a whole a respect for the mic and what it means to have an open mic.
Right.
You know, don't screw over the comedians with like a big drink minimum price, and
it's wild,
and
what
I mean, there's some places
$5 for 5 minutes, $10 for 10 minutes,
and they're really up your ass about buying it, like, right off the bat before you even got there. Yeah, right. So that's the scale to it, right? So even when you talk about Sycamore Tavern, the time I went, I'm like, I mean, it was bad, but it wasn't the worst I've experienced in this town, you know what I mean? So I feel bad like saying anything negative. I'm like, the host was nice enough, but it was still bad, you know? But that's how weird the range of how open mics operate here is.
Mm-hmm.
And even it can be with booked shows, too. I mean, my show, I really enjoy, love running it, but you know the setup in there. It's like, if we have 10 people that come out for that show, great.
Great.
But we've had nights we've had 3 people, and like, this is just weird. And it's just like, we need is 7 more people. How can I get,
though. It's still a good intimate time.
And the show you did was great. Oh, I mean, that was a fun night. We've had a couple nights where it has been, they still have fun, but it's still a little awkward. You're like, God, why couldn't I just get like 5 more people
in? You know that right there is going to turn into something nice, because that shit right, that's the shit that builds right there. That's the shit that brings the community in, because people become, they come walk through there, and they come walk through there regularly, and it's like, oh, this is an adult book place. Oh, it's very strange. That place I love it. Love it when I go. I'm like, ah, is that a vagina? That's a vagina right there. That's exactly what that is. It looked like flowers, but it's a vagina. And I love it in there. And like the vibe of it, it feels like back at home. Like a spot when you go to back at home where it's just a few people and it's like, oh, y'all know what's about to happen in here. Oh, y'all are here to stay? Okay, cool. Yeah. You know, just a few people, it doesn't matter. Like, not to twist the line, but like Babylon. Babylon out in Metairie in New Orleans. That was a place just like that, a bar that just had regulars come in. And after 2 is when it would get packed, but we would be done way before then. Mm-hmm. It's so weird when you see that happen. But the people that are in there, it's like 3, maybe 4 people, son. Mm-hmm. The rest of us comics, we outweigh the people that's in there, but they're still in there and they're listening, though.
Yeah.
And then some more people come in, but it's a small bar. It's real narrow. You walk in, there's a bar to the side, and they got about at least maybe 20 fucking stools, bar stools, maybe a little bit more than that. But, you know, it's very small, intimate, and it is very enjoyable, and that's what that felt like. Like going to your place, it just, it makes me miss it. And it's like, this feels good. This definitely feels good. My comedy has definitely changed. Yeah, I'm in that phase where I'm actually taking a step back, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to really assess this from the outside and try to wiggle my way in like that, because I get it now. You know, I got to be more professional and actually take my art and put it out there more. So, yeah. I got my special, and I finally watched it. And I did, and I need to do something with that.
Where was that?
I did that at Always Lounge in the Twilight Room.
Yeah.
Back there. Yeah, okay, my Inquisitor's cool. Observations, comedy poetry. So, yeah, it was about an hour. An hour and a half, actually. An hour and a half of comedy poetry. The whole mixture of everything that I do. And that was my big show. And I'm like, all right, I got this. Now, I don't know where to go with it from. Like, shit. Here's the next step. You know, what's the next step? I'm not sure, because I've always tried to do this all by myself, and I know eventually it can't happen anymore. You gotta fucking move on. You gotta start asking for help. You know. So. But, man, this has been a good time. Look cool. at that.
Boom. Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
It accomplished what yes. the podcast goal is.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Just a good leisure talk that felt good. I feel close to you so much. I've always felt close to you.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, you like, ever since I met you, I'm like, oh, you fit in. Just you fit in well, especially because knowing you from Kamari and Laura, just that's all family right there. So
yeah,
it's been sure. good to actually be a part of your little humble abode here, man. It makes me want one of these, dude. This is the nook of all nooks. Like, honestly, and people don't know this, but I love me a nook. Goddamn it, I love a goddamn just a nice closed off cozy place. Ah, this is good shit. But, man, let everybody know where they can find you at, dude.
Oh, sure. So my website's SumukComedy.com, SUMUKH, and that's the same thing for all social media. Mostly I'm on Instagram now. Yeah. I deleted Twitter off my phone, so I'm not really that active with it. But it's there, Sumuk Comedy also. And Facebook, I mostly just post stuff about shows or links to interesting stuff for people on there. So,
oh, that's good.
But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Well, on top of that,
And YouTube too. That's where the how-to videos. Yeah, are. Just
check out the how-to videos, man. Go ahead and subscribe.
So yeah, really, Instagram and YouTube is probably where I'm most active at this point.
Oh, good shit.
Yeah.
What if you had to pick a Joker out of all the Jokers? What Joker would you be? What Joker do you feel like right now?
The Joker from Batman we're referring to?
Yeah, yeah.
So which actor?
Oh, yeah, any Joker. Like, which actor, whichever played which Joker you got your...
Heath I mean, Ledger, it's still, I'll always have
Jack
a strong affinity for Heath Ledger's.
Uh-huh.
But Jack Nicholson's is very close. Yeah. But I always really like Heath Ledger's.
Yeah.
I think that scene with him in Batman in that interrogation room is so damn good.
That's really
that
good.
That it's stuck in my mind since the first time I watched it. Yeah. I go and I'm like, that's where this movie stands out among any other movie. That was so good.
That was the first time I actually, like, because I was like, well, what the fuck? All right, I've always despised the Joker. I'm a big Batman fan. But the Joker, it always riddled me. Like, the Joker, what is it that you do? What are you doing? And it's just, you're just there to just to torment Batman. Mm-hmm. And just fuck with him and do the horrific shit. Like, this Joaquin, he played the fuck out of that. That is, I really enjoyed that. But Heath, that really gave you an insight on the sadisticness of a crazy motherfucker. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
Bitch, you blew up the goddamn hospital, son. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, that is so good. And then right after that, just ride through the wind with you.
Even, that opening scene is great. In the bank.
Yes.
Ah, this is a great movie, man.
Makes me want to go home and watch that. I'm probably gonna go home and watch that. Made me. I'm gonna ask this question to everybody now at the end of this because it opens a whole. But hey, man, that's good. That's good, man. This has been goddamn fun. We've been here for a minute. This has been, man. Tell Me a Joke, the Guideline of Chasing the Dream. I'm your host, the Maniacal Menace, Kyle Smith, and this has been Smuk.
Yep.
Say your last name. How do you?
Torgalkar.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I totally did not have that in my head. I don't think I've ever heard your last name being really? Said.
Yeah. I don't know.
Huh. I've always just glanced over it and never tried to approach it because I've never been told it.
That's okay. You didn't have to introduce me or anything like that. That's all right. Awesome. It's not a problem.
That's cool, man. But until next time, man. Holla. Good shit.